Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Two questions for you this hour. One, why are the first 5 years of human life such a crucial time? And two, what can families and communities be doing to most help young children thrive? A group of nonprofits and businesses across the Commonwealth have joined together to get us thinking about those queries and the best answers to them. They're calling themselves the Smart Beginnings Campaign. And two people helping lead that effort in our part of the state are here with further detail. Of course, if you have insight into what young children most need and how to get it to them, you're certainly most welcome to join the conversation, which is getting underway right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What does a young child most need to thrive in life? And why should any of us care about whether she or he gets what they most need? A bit later in the hour, we'll be hearing from a clinical psychologist who's put a lot of study into the needs of young children, both in this country and in other places in the world. But we are going to begin with two regional leaders of a statewide campaign called Smart Beginnings Start with Families. Cynthia Pritchard is a member of the Shenandoah Valley Leadership Council for the Smart Beginnings Campaign. She is also executive director of United Way of Greater Augusta. Barbara Hutchinson is active in the Smart Beginnings effort for the Greater Charlottesville region. She also serves as director of community initiatives for the Thomas Jefferson Area United Way. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, Barbara, you first then. Just what is the Smart Beginnings campaign, and why should people care about it?
Well, Start with Families is happening between Mother's Day and Father's Day to remind parents of the importance of what to do with their children in terms of engaging their brains. So it's a time when we're beginning to look at vacations and slowing down a little bit. But for young children, we need parents to know now more than ever that their interactions with their children really will make a difference in their success in life. Development before the age of five, studies are showing us, is more important than a child attending school later on. Not that attending school isn't important, but what studies are demonstrating is that a child's brain begins developing at birth and is 80% complete by the time they're age four. So what happens between birth and age four makes a remarkable difference in how well they'll be able to not only perform in school, but become employed and have a successful life.
You know, one of the things about families is families, both the immediate and extended family, have the most interaction with children from zero to four. They spend a great deal of time with family, whether family is the primary care provider or whether with parents in the evening. And parents have a great and families have a great opportunity to come up with teachable moments all throughout the day as a child develops. You know, word recognition, using language and using those components of explaining things, naming items, identifying colors, counting things and looking at things outdoors, engaging with your child. Put your cell phone away. Walk away from your computer and engage with your child one-on-one, and that's going to help in the developmental process. And families have a key component of that because they are with them most of the time.
Cynthia Pritchard, tell me more about what Barbara was talking about also. The notion that this is a critical time. Why is it a critical time, and what difference does it make if you're reading to a child beginning at age two rather than beginning at age six?
Well, we know that 80% of brain development takes place between zero to five. So we know that that is the key component of engaging the brain and teaching the brain to begin to learn and grasp material. So it's absolutely vital that we engage them sooner versus later. We know kids that arrive to school, which is that sort of 5 to 6 marker, that arrive to school behind, stay behind. And that has a long-term continuum right to their first place of employment or through their college and academic career.
We know that a young child's brain develops 700 synapses per second. To me, that's an overwhelming statistic. But what that means is
I sometimes feel like I'm losing 700 synapses a second.
But what most of us could understand is that the brain has a use it or lose it methodology. So
explain it.
That means that the connections that are used the most frequently are the ones that receive further development. And the ones that aren't used as much never continue to develop.
So the reason that I am at such a loss at anything mechanical is because nobody handed me a screwdriver and said, play with this when I was 3 years old?
Well, I'm not sure it's quite that or not. I just know that in general, what we know now is that a child who doesn't receive the same level of early childhood interaction and learning opportunities by the time they're age five are going to start school with an achievement gap compared to a child who did receive quality interactions and quality learning opportunities at a younger age. We also know that in Virginia, 23% of the children under five live in poverty. That's not counting those who live near poverty. And families who live in and near poverty are more stressed and more worried about basic living necessities, getting to work to be able to earn the paycheck, to be able to buy food, to be able to repair a car, etc. And those who are more affluent aren't in that same level of stress. So those more affluent have more opportunities to learn all of these things about what makes a difference to their child and then engage in those activities or use resources for children. Whereas parents of low-income children or in low-income families don't have those same resources. So Smart Beginnings is about leveling the field and making early childhood opportunities available for all children in Virginia so that everybody can arrive at school ready.
Barbara Hutchinson is Director of Community Initiatives for the United Way in the Greater Charlottesville region that calls itself the Thomas Jefferson Area United Way. Cynthia Pritchard is Executive Director of the Augusta Area United Way. Both are active with a statewide campaign called Smart Beginnings Start with Families. If you want to speak with them, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Any ideas about what you think young children most need? Are there things that government should be doing, that communities should be doing, that individuals should be doing that you don't see getting done? This from Jessica, who says, quote, when I try to talk with some people about early childhood development and the importance of having certain needs met early in life, I invariably get a reply that is some version of, look, I did not get coddled in that way when I was a little kid, and I turned out just fine. Do your guests have suggestions on how to respond to that kind of attitude?
Tom, this is Cynthia. And to Jess's question, I think some of the generational gaps have impacted this. So, for example, yes, I don't think she's talking about coddling, but I remember as from my growing up, my mother did not have a cell phone. She did not have a computer. She was not distracted by other things. So there was a lot more verbal interaction and everything that took place. So I think what Jess is struggling with is people understanding that the normal behaviors that took place when we were children that did not appear to be coddling in nature, but yet were developmental in nature. Those word connections, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, maybe if your father put a screwdriver in your hand, you might be able to put something together. Well, we know that both nature...
I can hope.
that both nature and nurture are involved in brain development. And what children receive in the early years creates the ability to learn, manage emotions, and gather information. So we want to make sure that those interactions are positive and they're not technology-based. Yes, putting a child in front of a TV creates some kind of interaction, but it's not the kind of interaction that develops the brain. So we want to make sure that there's a difference between coddling, educating, and nurturing that are generationally different. And I think when she talks to it about people, I think you get people whose parents actually did that just by rote, by what they did in the morning. I know that, you know, when I raised my children and my parents raised me, you know, we would talk about words or talk about words in the car, everything from the license plate game that we used to play driving on a family vacation to that kids could identify the words Iowa, Arkansas, those kind of words doesn't happen anymore. Everybody is on their electronic and gadget. And I think there's a difference between that and engagement. And I think to answer Jess's question is basically, I think people are misunderstanding interaction and
coddling,
and which are two very different things.
Right. I think that a parent being supportive of a child, so the child's growing up knowing that the parent is there to help when needed, but in a supportive way, not a critical way, that's not coddling. Children need to learn to self-regulate, learn self-control, and they can only do that if they're in an environment where there's trust. And again,
tell me more about that.
Well, I think that we don't expect our children to learn to talk by themselves. We don't expect them to learn to walk by themselves. We don't throw them in the middle of a river to learn to swim. And so they're not going to have positive emotional health and well-being if we don't help them learn that. But
what I heard you say, I thought, Barbara Hutchinson, is that children are only going to learn to self-regulate if they have trust. Okay.
Yes. And trust.
Connect the dots for me on that.
Trust means that a child can rely on the parent to be there when needed. And if the parent doesn't respond, there's not trust. And so the child doesn't learn, I believe, how to regulate emotion. So again, I know there's controversy over when do you pick up a crying baby. But certainly, I think most mothers, and again, this is a little bit easier to discuss from the female perspective, but I think mothers kind of develop a sixth sense about the types of cry a child has. And so a mom can discern between a child that's hungry versus a child that has a severe pain all of a sudden versus a child who's just tired and worn out and needs rest. And so it's taking that sixth sense and that kind of parenting skill and applying it to trust. A child has to learn, so they aren't going to learn if they don't start. So walking, we help our children. We don't let them fall too many times. We don't let them fall in a dangerous situation, but we might let them fall with assistance so that they start to understand balance. And so I think that's true with emotional well-being as well, that a child has to learn that a parent will be there if there's something wrong, but that in the meantime, they might be able to do something by themselves. If they reach, they might be able to get to a book without having assistance. But so it's really, I think, a cycle, both physically and mentally, of well-being that we want parents to understand about their children. And again, it's not always the high-tech scientific, we have to do these wonderful things and spend thousands of dollars to have a successful child. It's all the little things, taking the time to listen, taking the time to talk, to read. Even a parent who's extremely busy and has a large family, as Cynthia stated, taking the time in the car to create an opportunity to talk about how was your day, what did you do, and encouraging vocabulary by having a child talk about what they did during the day. I read another interesting fact, and sorry, I'm going to be the fact person today, that amazed me, and that was that a child of professional parents is exposed to 1,500 more words per minute than a child of low-income parents, such that by age 4, there's a 3.5 million word deficit for the low-income child compared to the child of the professional parents. And to me, that's astounding. I didn't even know that one might know 3 or 4 million words, but...
We have to pause for the break. We're talking about something called the Smart Beginnings Start with Families campaign. As you can tell, it has a lot to do with early childhood development. And in a few moments, we're going to talk to a clinical psychologist about his view on this. Joining us now by phone, a clinical psychologist who's given much attention to the issue of early childhood development and the needs of young children, not only here in the U.S., but in other parts of the world. He is a professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University and also serves as executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, Dr. Craig Shealy. So good to have you back on the Inside Airwaves.
Great to be here, Tom.
Well, Craig, what do young children, in your view, most need in order to thrive? And how important is it that they get it?
Yeah, this is such a fascinating issue because we're really talking about ourselves and how we raise ourselves as a species. And, you know, we kind of come into the world without any clear instructions, you know, to do that. We have to kind of figure it out by talking with one another, by history, and by these days looking into the literature and trying to understand what actually is associated with optimal and non-optimal kinds of outcomes. So what kids need, I mean, this is a very complex question on the one hand to answer and sort of fundamental on the other. They basically, human beings, little human beings come into the world really not having any idea of what the world is that they're entering into. So think about that for a moment. You're born, you have no language as we understand it. You are born with a set of basic reflexes that allow you to communicate and engage with the world, but everything about your growth and development depends upon the world's engagement with you. So essentially, we learn who we are. We learn how to organize ourselves in terms of our cognitive, our emotional, our interpersonal, our behavioral functioning by our experience of the world's experience of us. That's how we come to know who we are. That's how we come to learn about what the world, how the world works and who we are in it. So Erik Erikson, for example, a famous psychosocial stage theorist, observed that the first stage of life, trust versus mistrust, from approximately 0 to 2, during that period of time, much of it pre-language, we are learning whether the world is a trusting place, meaning that does our impact on the world, our parents, our surroundings, does it result in a response that tells us that the world is a safe, loving, predictive place? So those fundamental aspects of responsiveness to what the human organism needs is my, I guess, most basic response to what it is that is required for healthy, sort of good enough development and adjustment.
Well, Craig, and I'm hoping that our two guests here in studio, Barbara Hutchinson from the United Way in the Greater Charlottesville region and Cynthia Pritchard from the Augusta area United Way, are going to have questions for you and interactions with you as well. But both of these ladies in the previous segment talked a little bit about trust, and I think it was Cynthia who said that early development is critically important to how a child learns to manage emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Barbara who said that self-regulation has a lot to do with what children at an early age learn about trust. Mm-hmm. Do you see both of those issues as on target?
Oh, fundamentally. And what's so interesting about the work they're doing, I took a bit to just look over this New Beginnings initiative, is that it essentially is attempting to translate what we know theoretically from an applied standpoint in the clinic, for example, from an empirical standpoint in terms of research, into policy. So taking this information, this rich information we have, and translating it into education and training programs, trying to influence policy, you know, so I would not only heartily endorse the perspective that they're offering, but commend them for attempting to link policy and activity, you know, in terms of real-world interventions with what is now a substantial applied and empirical database.
I think that it's easy to translate this to something mechanical, such as driving a car.
Right.
We're all required to take driver's ed, but we're not required to know anything before we have children.
Right.
So I think that that's where initiatives like Smart Beginnings are critical in a state, in a community, what have you, because we're really talking about the child and the family, but also about the community. Mm. And that's the other thing that we haven't addressed today. The investment in the child pays off for the community economically as well, too, through lower
incarceration. So if you want to tell us about this, I should mention that it's Barbara Hutchinson speaking.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay, because there are people who probably want to know who it is that's going to tell them about making the economy better.
Well, and Cynthia can join in as well, but we know that through studies that children who participate in quality early childhood learning, such as preschool, or a high-quality provider, are less likely to commit crimes, less likely to be incarcerated, and therefore not using up what would otherwise be the cost of taking care of them if they were incarcerated. So From a public perspective, we're talking about an improved economy where there's a lower crime rate. We're talking about a school not spending money on repeat grades because children are more successful because they start out without that achievement gap. And we're talking about a workforce as well that Cynthia alluded to earlier.
Well, one of the things that's absolutely vital is if we get kids that start to school ready to learn, and they learn and they use the academic process from beginning to end, they're more prepared to enter the workforce academically, as well as with the skills, maturity. You know, we talked even a little bit about emotion. That's a key component. We want to make sure that there's a viable workforce. Our economy cannot grow if we don't have the individuals to take place of the people that are retiring, you know, and those skill sets that are necessary in order to grow our economy.
And so what I'm getting is from you, Cynthia, from Barbara Hutchinson, and from Dr. Shealy, is that all of those things later in life are fundamentally affected by what happens to a child at age 6 months, 18 months, 3 years, 4 years of age.
Right. We know that a dollar invested now comes back to our community at $5 for every dollar that's invested.
And so that, now being what?
For that's a child 0 to 5. The money that we invest in 0 to 5, whether it be having affordable, high-quality early childhood care, preschool, you know, Head Start, those early intervention programs. The dollar, $1 that we spent here will come back to us in $5 later on.
So you're quoting a study of some sort that you've seen.
Okay, so the $5 comes back in multiple ways. It's going to come back in reduced cost of adaptive education in the school system. So a child that starts school behind requires remediation through the whole school system process. We also know that they make significantly more money later on, children that graduate on time and on grade level that meet the standards of learning for that particular grade are going to be more money than those that do not.
And actually, that stat comes from the Virginia Department of Education.
Right.
And it is my understanding that the Virginia Chamber of Commerce recently released a report in which, in essence, they endorse much of what you're saying and doing and calling for improvements in early childhood education in Virginia. For you listening, if you have a question for our guests, we do have phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK, but so far people have preferred to use our Facebook page where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Imagine that. And this is from Lauren, who posted on that Facebook page this question. Quote, back in the 1990s, Hillary Clinton's book, It Takes a Village, sparked a storm of controversy because of her assertion that raising children well meant involving a whole community of people. Is that idea still seen as controversial today, or have most people come to accept that caring for children cannot come from just two parents, let alone a single parent by themselves?
I think that is simplistic in some regard. When we talk about a community, we talk about all the aspects of a community, whether it be the education system, whether it be preschool and early childhood education, whether it be even the workplace model with parents. As we know right now, I think the reason it takes a larger community and more people engaged is we have two working parents. So children are not at home with a parent on a day-to-day basis where they can have these normal interactions. They are in child care facilities. And we want to make sure that those child care facilities provide the quality of interaction that children were provided in prior generations. So when you talk about a community, yes, it is an investment of the community to make sure that those things are there and viable and affordable for all working families across the region so that we can expose children to the best that we can at that early childhood development.
Also, we are a very mobile society today. And so it's very likely that your next door neighbor doesn't have family in your community. And if both parents are working, we know somewhere along the way there's going to be some sort of child care breakdown. And one of those parents is likely to have to be absent from work or late, or goes to work worrying about a sick child. So again, it's community impact. So if there are, it's going to take a community in that case, somebody's going to help care for that child, or somebody's going to have to do the parent's work if the parent has to miss work. So again, I think I agree with Cynthia. It's simplistic to say it takes a community. Well, it takes parts of a community, absolutely. And then what we deal with so much in United Way and in Smart Beginnings are not only the child care providers, but we're working with low-income families. And again, the stresses on a low-income family are very different and more acute than those on a family that don't have those same income issues.
With us by phone, clinical psychologist and executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, Dr. Craig Sheely, here in the Insight Studio at WMRA, the executive director of the Augusta Area United Way, Cynthia Pritchard, plus the director of community initiatives for the Thomas Jefferson Area United Way, Barbara Hutchinson. Ms. Pritchard and Ms. Hutchinson also involved in this thing called the Smart Beginnings Start with Families campaign. Hey, Dr. Sheely, does it take a village to raise a child?
Well, you know, in many ways, yes, except that you can't look at all of the participants in the village as necessarily having an equal role in that process. So it's just, you know, it's kind of a matter of logic and common sense that in the raising of children, many, many different people and systems are involved. It's true that in most cases, caregivers, parents, are at the hub of that wheel, but the wheel extends out to include teachers or members of churches, to other members of the community, neighbors, friends, relatives. So, you know, we are social creatures, and the idea that, you know, only one, that parents may be the most important figures or in a child's life, but that does not mean that those parents themselves aren't embedded in a broader community network, which influences their ability to parent in the way that they do, and that their own children aren't going to be impacted profoundly by other children, by their peers, by teachers, by other members of the community. So I think we get caught sometimes in these sort of political debates about things that obscure the both the complexity of the issues and in some ways the truth of the matter, that we raise ourselves as a community and we reap the benefits or the non-benefits of whatever we do in that regard.
Going next to Waynesboro, Carl, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for Barbara Hutchinson, Cynthia Pritchard, and or Dr. Craig Sheely.
Yes, hi. Thanks for letting me speak. Say something. Up until just the last comment made, I just I hadn't heard anything about really the importance of family, and I'm not talking just family values. I'm not talking necessarily religious values and stuff. I'm just talking parents that take the time and actually parent their kids, don't just put them down in front of a electronic gizmo, play with them. I think that it's as a physician, I just saw so many parents that just seem to not really take care of their kids appropriately at times. And I just want to state that I think starting, you know, from birth, it's so important that these children not just be put on a couch and they be handled and shown love and stuff. And I think that's the most important thing. Then you can get into maybe why you need to invest, et cetera, et cetera. I think all that's important, but I really think the parents are the number one, I'm not going to say problem, but the number one thing to really make sure that the child grows up in a good environment. You just cannot ignore that. And you see too much of that that does not exist these days, it seems to me. Thank you.
I agree with you.
Carl, hang on for us, because our guest may have a question for you.
I agree with you, Carl.
This is Barbara.
I, even in our Smart Beginnings initiatives, one of the things that we try to teach parents is when they go to look at child care centers, for example, if they're looking for a provider, one thing they need to do is look and make sure there's no TV that the kids are sitting in front of. And so it really is. We have generations now that have literally grown up with a television. And I think that's the message that they need to be hearing all the way around. And I appreciate hearing this from you as a physician, because I think physicians can play a part in that in terms of trying to provide the materials to young parents, especially, who may not really understand what they're doing to their children by not getting back to the old way of doing things without the television.
Cynthia, I don't know when Carl joined in listening here, but it does remind me that there are always people who tune in after we've said some things. But I recall near the beginning of the hour, you talking about how important it is for parents to set down their cell phones or their tablets or any kind of electronic device and talk to their kids. And it seems to me that Barbara was saying something similar. And it sounds like what I've heard so far since the beginning of the hour, this campaign that the two of you were involved in called Smart Beginnings Start with Children, part of it is stressing to parents and families how important the kinds of things Carol's talking about.
Absolutely, Tom. One of the things that, you know, this is the Smart Beginnings Start with Families. And as Barbara said in the beginning, it's running from Mother's Day to Father's Day. And the idea behind this is to really remind people how important that familial relationship is and the parent interaction and what it is from everything from just playing with your child, creating routines, read to them at bedtime, the simple little things, have meals together as a family. We talk about it very easily, but families struggle in doing that successfully with all the distractions that are available. So one of the things that this particular initiative under the Smart Beginnings umbrella, which is the Early Childhood Initiative, is the Smart Beginnings Start with Families, really talking about how important the family unit is in the development of this child. They are the one area where the children spend the most amount of time. So we want to make sure that they take advantage of it. And one of the things Smart Beginnings does do is provide tools to parents on how you can do it, how you interact with your children. If you don't know, you know, we are talking about multi-generations, as Barbara said, with technology and television. So a lot of these young parents didn't have parents that interacted. So we want to make sure that we provide them with the tools and make that information available.
Okay, I'm going to ask you more about that when we get back from the break. The break is coming up here pretty quickly. But Carol, before you go away, if you're willing to tell us, what is your medical specialty? Are you a general practitioner, a pediatrician?
Yeah, family practice. And if I could make one more comment, since I was lucky enough to retire recently, I've spent some time in my granddaughter's school, just kind of helping the teacher out in kindergarten. And, you know, it's really sad, sad to me, but you can already tell in kindergarten what kids are going to make it and what kids are going to have a lot of problems.
Carl, you've just underscored the point that all of the rest of our guests have been trying to make. Thank you for making that point so well. Dr. Craig Sheely, can you stay with us?
Sure.
We're going to continue this discussion with Barbara Hutchinson, Cynthia Pritchard, and psychologist Craig Sheely in just a bit more than 1 minute. And Carl, thank you again for your call. We'll be back soon. With us by phone, clinical psychologist and executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, Craig Sheely, plus Barbara Hutchinson, who is director of community initiatives for the United Way in the greater Charlottesville region that calls itself the Thomas Jefferson Area United Way, as well as Cynthia Pritchard, executive director of the Augusta Area United Way. Both Barbara and Cynthia are active with a statewide campaign called Smart Beginnings Start with Families. And let me, ladies, make sure I understand. This campaign that you've mentioned is in many ways kind of a publicity campaign between Mother's Day and Father's Day, sponsored in part by the Virginia State Library, the Virginia Early Education Foundation. You're nodding your heads. Okay. Most United Ways across the state, including your own. The idea is creating awareness of how critically important it is for children between the ages of birth and five to get certain needs met. Is that basically what the campaign is about? You're nodding your head.
I am.
This is Cynthia.
I am. This is Cynthia. Absolutely. You know, we want to make sure that people are aware of those basic needs and how they need to get met and how they can be met in different communities. You know, if you go to Smart Beginnings in any one of the regions across Virginia, and I know that just in our sector here, you know, we cover most of the area that you cover. So we know that there are, you know, those available to get materials.
Well, anybody can Google Smart Beginnings.
Correct.
Correct. But also on the Virginia Insight webpage, there are connections to these things. But before somebody gets time to get back on their electronic device that they've gotten off of so they can spend time with their kids and get to that information, I'm curious if you've all mentioned something about specifics, about things parents can be doing. Cynthia, I think you used the word tools. So since we can't see him, I'm going to put Dr. Greg Shealy on the spot and see if he can give us some specifics about tools parents can be using, or grandparents, or anybody else who interacts with kids between ages 0 and 5.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we do a lot of this kind of work in clinic-based settings. So when I'm working with our doctoral students in supervision and we're watching families interact and they're learning how to intervene with families, one fundamental observation I guess I would make is that in the vast, vast majority of cases, you know, parents, whatever their capacities or incapacities, want to do the right thing by and large for their kids. And so the kinds of things that we often emphasize is we start there by acknowledging the fact that their motives in most cases are good, and that we seek an understanding of the nature of the attachment between them and their children, the love that they feel. We try to place those fundamental feelings and hopes and needs in the center of the relationship. So a first thing I would suggest is that if someone is approaching a parent or a family, try to approach them from the standpoint of mutuality and respect, honoring the fact that, you know, they're trying to do the best that they can and that this is an imperfect art and science. That's one tool I guess I would offer. A second is that encouraging through whatever medium that is, the Smart Beginnings program, other kinds of therapeutic interventions, working with people in the church or community or neighbors or friends, get feedback about how it is that it's a hard thing to do, but with trusted others asking for advice and perspective on how, you know, what's the perception of how I'm doing here, and then offering up, there are just a mountain of resources. Smart Beginnings is a wonderful resource, but there are many other as well. So learning about issues of communication, learning about issues of discipline, trying to understand why one is inclined to treat one's kids in a particular way in the first place. Usually that's lodged in one's own history or one's own community. These kinds of explorations that are done in a safe, respectful manner often go a long way toward helping improve the nature of parent-child relations.
Some examples that I see locally in Central,
this is Barbara Hutchinson.
Central Virginia. We have a local agency, Children, Youth, and Family Services, that partners with Smart Beginnings, and they serve families that have children who are at risk of developmental issues, but they offer services to the entire community. And so they have Saturday workshops on how to discipline, how to work with children who have regulation issues, self-regulation issues, how to use books. And so part of our activities regarding the specific campaign with the Virginia Early Childhood Foundation right now is that we're going to be providing books to our scholarship families, families that receive child care scholarships from the United Way. But Smart Beginnings will be providing books. But along with the book will be some materials to help the parent learn how to use the book. So instead of reading the book and that's the end of it, use the book. So if the book is about a dog, you know, visit the SPCA and learn about dogs. Go for a hike to identify things that you can find walking through your neighborhood that are in the book. Concentrate on words that are in the book or sounds in the book. So those kinds of easy tools, but that the average parent, I know, you know, when I was young and had a child, I wouldn't have thought about some of those activities. So just those simple kinds of things that a parent can do. So providing those types of resources and working with other agencies in the community to make sure that parents know where resources are. So part of this campaign is to make sure parents know what their local libraries do and what resources the libraries have, for example.
You know, when we have a campaign where we give books to children, we have about 1,200 children in Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro, 0 to 5, that are receiving books delivered on a monthly basis to them.
So We, Cynthia, for anybody who's just joined us, is the Greater Augusta United Way.
So okay. It covers Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro, and they receive a book delivered to their home, and they also receive a newsletter giving them ideas on how to do that. And I know the libraries in the community have some great programs across the region, and that is one of the partners here in bringing the children into the library to use the library. We know that homes with books in it, children are more literate, whether the books are even ever opened, because it puts value on books. So if parents have a book collection, children have a tendency to be more literate if there's no books in the house. We also know that when kids get a book given to them, they want an activity to happen with an adult. So they want somebody to read them and help them get through the book. So it creates those relationships. Just by giving a book to a child will create a parent maybe to react in a proper way of reading that book. You know, reading, playing, keeping, you know, I think big thing that we talk about, it's summer. Play with your children, interact with your children, have a relationship with your children beyond the getting up, going to school, coming home, going to bed routine, something where you get a chance to interact with them.
Well, I have a copy that I printed out of one of the tip sheets from the Smart Beginnings Start with Families website. And I just want to read the headlines on this particular sheet. Each one of these headlines is followed by a paragraph of further suggestion. But the headlines say, play with your child, create and keep routines, read at bedtime, have meals together as much as possible, take time to talk and listen. Children learn by your example, show respect to gain respect. And the last headline on this particular sheet is unconditional love. Craig Shealy, do you want to speak to any of those? Do any of those spark ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a wonderful list of sort of components that seem to be associated with healthier emotional, cognitive, behavioral, interpersonal, social development. I think one piece that maybe hasn't been emphasized as much yet is that, you know, it's important to keep in mind that, again, if all parents have, well, not all, but many, most parents seem to have their best interests of their children at heart, even if they're not knowing necessarily always how to provide what their kids need. The other variable to keep in mind is that the stressors that are external to parents on the family, within a community, issues of poverty, issues of racism, issues of sexism, all these kinds of factors and variables also influence the ability of parents to be able to provide the kind of care that they're capable of providing. So it's important to look at these external variables. And another piece of the puzzle, I think, is helping parents just to understand what it means to develop as a child. In other words, what do children fundamentally need, and why do they need what they need in order to develop in a good enough way? That knowledge is often lacking, honestly, and I it appears that Smart Beginnings wants to take a crack at that as well, which I think is great.
Are there scary things about being a kid today that many people who are parenting young children didn't experience themselves as kids, let alone grandparents? I mean, are there ways that it's difficult for us as adults to see the world through a 3 or 4 year old's eyes? Not just because we don't remember when we were 3 or 4, but being 3 or 4 is different today?
Well, I think being 3 or 4 today, from a developmental evolutionary standpoint, is pretty much the way it was 100 years ago, meaning that, or 1,000 years ago, really, in terms of what infants and children, toddlers need in order to develop. The circumstances have changed massively, but those fundamental needs for attachment, for example, are the same now as they were, 100 years ago. And we know that from research all over the world, that if children, for example, aren't given touch, they're not physically held, that there can be profound implications for their development, emotionally, socially, and otherwise. So I think it's important for us as adults to reflect on these matters and understand that children are not just little adults. They are creatures that have fundamental sets of needs, and it's in our interest, both as parents and as communities and societies, to understand what those needs are and to work toward meeting them in a more responsive, caring manner.
Okay, so one of the reasons I'm looking at you, Barbara Hutchinson, is I think I recall, hopefully correctly, that in your early education back in the 1980s, when you were studying psychology, you did a concentration in early childhood development. Now, as one of the leaders of this regional part of the Smart Beginnings campaign, you're very active in trying to get people aware of the latest research on early childhood development. Do you have a sense that being a young kid is any different today than it was back in the early 80s when you were studying this stuff, or back when you were a child before the early 80s?
Well, I think that there are differences in society today compared to when I was a very young child in the early 60s. And those are things such as the population has changed. So there are more people. So with more people, there are, you know, there are more opportunities for problems. I agree with the doctor that fundamentally the needs haven't changed, but I think what has changed are things that are not within the parent's control or the child's control. So,
for example, the mobility, maybe this is older children, but one of the things that I've heard parents talk about, including on this show in the past, is the level of fear being different, that letting children play outdoors and get exercise and get social interaction doesn't happen nearly as much as it did 20 years ago because we have such a high state of concern about some sort of stranger danger.
Right. I think that exists. Well, and here's another example. I volunteered as a CASA, a court-appointed special advocate for a child at one point in my life, and the family that I worked with had no rules. There were no boundaries. Children didn't know what bedtime was. They weren't made to go to school. They didn't open their windows or open their curtains. They lived in you know, just in this very closed environment. And I know that's an extreme, but it was local. And I think that 40 years ago, people were more aware of what was going on in a neighborhood. And there was more, you know, people had their windows open. There wasn't as much, I mean, air conditioning, I believe, has impacted us. Not that I would ever want to do without it. But I certainly don't have my windows open as frequently as what my mother did when I was growing up. And so you lived in a neighborhood, you heard other kids out playing. I think a child would be more likely to go out and play in the neighborhood versus staying indoors. Or people would be aware that, hey, the family that lives down the street, they don't ever come outside, ever. I mean, literally.
Or that a child was being mistreated because neighbors knew each other's business better.
So it's not that the needs of the child have changed, but I just think that we have more extremes today than we did then. And we have just the whole technology thing that we didn't deal with in the early 60s. I rarely got to watch television, even when I was a young teenager. You know, it was a rare, you know, it was not a routine that I watched television.
So Cynthia Pritchard, we've got less than a minute left. Is there something about the Smart Beginnings campaign we haven't yet said that you want to say, or you want to go back and reemphasize from earlier in a discussion?
I just really want to say that families are an active participant in their child's early learning. That's what it says on the top of the materials, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. And as everyone has said, it's not that children are different. It's just how we interact with them has changed and how we interact with each other. So it's real important that we kind of go back to the basics and interact and be a part of our children's development on a day-to-day basis.
Our guests have been Barbara Hutchinson, Director of Community Initiatives for the Thomas Jefferson Area United Way, Cynthia Pritchard, Executive Director of the Augusta Area United Way, both members of the Smart Beginnings Start with Children campaign, now going on across Virginia. Plus, by phone, Professor of Graduate Psychology at James Madison University, Clinical Psychologist and Executive Director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, Dr. Craig Shealy. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you.
Nice to be with you.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests and about this campaign called Smart Beginnings Start with Families. Much more information available through those links. Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Associate producers Bob Levicky, Terry Ward, and Dan Easley. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.